I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating 22 years in business and just entering our ninth year of doing this program. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2016 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Our topic today is a special edition part two, where to go fishing for candidates and what to do when all else fails. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, so we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management workshops, and you can find out more by going to our website. In fact, we opened an office in Taiwan earlier this year, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas for how to interact with a U.S. company, please let us know. Our Keeping a Track open line series is a response to the calls we get from clients both domestically and globally to address business issues that companies are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. I feel very privileged to have Barry Deutsch with us again on our program for part two. Barry is a very close friend, business colleague. Barry is a very well-known thought leader in hiring and peak performance management. He is a frequent and sought-after speaker for management meetings, trade associations, and CEO forums such as Vistage International, which is a worldwide CEO membership organization of more than 20,000 CEOs and senior executives. Many of his clients view him as their virtual chief talent officer. Barry is also frequently asked to present Impact Hiring Solutions award-winning programs on hiring, retention, and motivating top talent, and leverages a vast knowledge of over 30 years in the executive search field with a track record of successful placements in multi-billion dollar Fortune 100 companies, entrepreneurial firms, and middle market high growth organizations. He has worked closely with thousands of CEOs and key executives to help improve hiring success, leverage human capital, and raise the bar on talent acquisition. Barry earned his BA and MA from American University in Washington, D.C., and prior to his executive search career, Barry held positions of responsibility in finance and general management with Mattel, Beatrice Foods, and Westinghouse Cable. Barry is also the author of You're Not the Person I Hired. I look at this book as the Bible of hiring. If you do not have a copy of it, I would highly recommend you go to Barry's site. You'll see it on the website, or you can go on Amazon and get a copy. I feel very privileged to have Barry with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be the mobile workforce. Barry, welcome back to Open Line for session two. Where is Barry? One second here. Let me get Barry back on. Barry?
Yes.
There you are. Okay. I just did this wonderful introduction of you. Sorry about that. Anyway, we have Barry here with us, and welcome back to Open Line.
Great. Thanks, Dana.
Well, one more thing, Barry. Also, we're not going to show slides today.
Right.
So you'll just see the opening slide there, the title slide. This is going to be more of a discussion today.
Right. Good. So last time, we talked about some of the issues and problems in finding talent, particularly in this tough job market. We talked about the core aspect of writing something more compelling than using a job description masquerading as an ad. So I'm not going to refresh or retouch on that. If any of you are interested in our book, you can email me, and there's extensive information on how to write a compelling marketing statement. We're going to pick up at the stage of now that you've written this document, and it's compelling, it's exciting to folks, and they want to come forward, how do we target it to the right group? How do we get it in front of the kind of folks that we want to bring to the table? And that's what we're going to cycle through with today. So there's really three best practices. I'll call it four because the third one splits online and offline. And what I'd like to do is cycle through those for a few minutes. Number one, your most lucrative approach to bringing outstanding folks to the table is not advertising. It's employee referrals. And in fact, I'm going to extend that. It's not just employee referrals. Let's rename that. Let's call it stakeholder referrals. Customers, vendors, suppliers, subcontractors, and your employees, everybody who touches your organization. All of them know who great people are. All of them have other networks, and they're one degree removed from the kind of people you want to be hiring. So we want to be going after those folks. Why don't we get more referrals from them? Well, before we even go into that, let me set a goal. The very best companies that I've had an experience of working with, regardless of size, whether you got 37 employees, you got 10,000 employees, doesn't matter, the very best aggressively work their referral networks. And in fact, many of them who are very successful at this and have spent a couple of years working it, hire 70 to 80% of all their employees across the board through referral prospecting. Your minimum goal from this call, from this day forward, should be 50%. So for the rest of this year, next year, the next 3 years of this increasing economic boom we're in and the expansion of the job market, your goal should be 50% of all hires come from the channel of referrals. All right, now we come back to the primary problem. Why do most companies not get to 50%? Why do most companies languish and wallow around the 10 to 15, 20% mark in terms of referrals? The number one issue that I hear, you know, I'm doing 5 to 6 workshops a month. I'm probably, you know, let's say, to 32,000 people have seen me give this presentation the last 20 years, so you can do the math and figure that out on an annual basis. But the most common response I hear is that we don't share it with them. We don't ask. How do most of your employees discover you got an opening? The two most common responses are they either recognize you had an opening because the new person shows up on their first day of work scrambling for a desk and a phone, or they read it online. And many times, if it's close enough to their job description, they think you're recruiting for them, their role. Those are the two most common ways that folks find out. Or maybe we're a little bit lucky and you do something a little more proactive. You shoot an email around to everyone saying you've got this opening, or you do it old school style where you take a thumbtack, you take the job description, and you stick it up on the cork board by the bulletin board near the break room or lunch room. Or you're a little bit internet savvy and you post it on your internet. Same idea. Doesn't work. So imagine now, you take your compelling marketing statement, you attach an email to it, and you send it to the 5 people on that team, the 10 people in that department. You send it to your customers, your suppliers, your vendors, your subcontractors, and you say something like, attached is a compelling statement of work for a role we're currently trying to recruit for. Would you mind passing this along to friends, former, notice I didn't say current, former business associates that you've worked with in other companies? We want to make it very clear we're not trying to recruit people from your competitors, your contractors, your vendors, and others within your network that you think might be compelled by this opportunity and able to deliver the results we've defined. The 10 you give it to, they give it to 10 more that they know. Those 10 give it to 10 they know. Those 10 give it to 10 they know. In 2 weeks, it's now in the hands of 1,000 people. You're leveraging one degree of separation. Everybody who touches your business knows your next hire through one degree being away from them. You're trying to hire a senior accountant. Your former controllers know this person. The local CPA firms know this person. All of your vendors and suppliers who are working with folks in your accounting and finance department know this person. We're leveraging all those relationships. Most of my clients, 70 to 80% of their hiring comes from leveraging referrals of folks who already know them. And there's ways to expand this. The amazing thing to me about referral programs is there's an unbelievable level of literature, content, best practices that have been published over the last two decades that's easily accessible for free on the internet that goes into great detail on how you do this. So that should be the primary method. Now, you might say, well, our primary method of doing this is giving incentives. You know, we offer $200, $500, $1,000 if people will stay for X period of time. I'm going to suggest that using financial incentives to drive referrals is a worthless strategy. Nobody cares that you offer money. Now, the flip side of that is you actually have to give people a reward if they bring someone to the table and you hire them and they stay for a period of time. The difference is it's not an incentive. It's not changing their behavior. That's where you have to have a cultural level, values, communication. You have to embed it into what you do as an organization. It has nothing to do with money. But you have to give people a reward if they bring someone forward and the person gets hired, because if you don't, they'll never do it again. That's the difference. It's a reward, not an incentive. Many of my clients are experimenting with a wide range of incentives, even for incentives if someone makes a referral and the person just gets through the first interview round. Maybe you offer them a $20 Starbucks card. You know, and what's level two if they make it to that stage? Have you thought about potentially offering some kind of reward for vendors, customers, suppliers, even other folks who visit your business or buy from you, as a way of recognizing they went above and beyond the call of duty to bring or refer someone or someone they know to you? All sorts of great ideas there. Okay, so that's
Barry, oh, a question just came in. How does one avoid that looking at every word? Some companies don't allow somebody to accept a gift because it could look odd. So any way to make that work as a thank you to somebody without breaching some corporate?
I don't think you're necessarily doing it as a a corporate thing. You can offer it. People are welcome to decline it or say, hey, I can't accept anything like a Starbucks card from you. So be it. Then you just send them a thank you and say, really appreciate what you did for us. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
But again, we're trying to show recognition. We're trying to respect people who may not be one of your employees, but they went above and beyond the call of duty to help you out. As I said, there's an unbelievable level of literature that's out there on the internet. All you got to do is go into Google, search for, you know, employee referral programs or vendor referral programs, and you'll be amazed by what comes back. The key is to make this idea of referrals part of your culture. You know, the people are so excited to be with you that they love being in your organization is, how do we get them to go out and tell all their friends and all their buddies? And one element of that is, as you're probably noticing, popping up on the internet are all sorts of recruiting apps and tools to leverage your employees, vendors, customers, referrals. That, you know, that cute phrase everyone's using is crowdsourcing. But if you think about it for a minute, all these people who touch your business have their connections stored in Facebook, LinkedIn, Gmail. How do you link through that and get them to share your compelling marketing statement with the folks that they actually know? And there's some really interesting applications starting to be developed in that area. So I keep an eye on that. I just, in fact, got an email about a webinar about one this morning. Okay, number two, online advertising. As you'll recall from our last webinar, as you can tell, I'm not a big proponent of online advertising. As I said before, I think the vast majority of advertising brings the bottom third of the candidate pool. Everybody else is rejects, retreads, dysfunctional, toxic folks. A way to boost that is to, instead of posting your job description, to post your compelling marketing statement and leave it up for 2 weeks. I know the job boards let you leave stuff up for 30 days, 45 days, 60 days. In 2 weeks, everybody who's looking at job boards has seen your ad, and it's either stale or not. You will have already seen the candidate. The fact that they allow you to leave it up for 30 days is useless. Okay, if you haven't pulled the right group of candidates in 30 days, I'd like to urge you to take your compelling marketing statement, rip it down, and completely rewrite it. Your first assumption should not be, oh, we're not going to pull many candidates from that channel. Your first assumption should be, whatever we wrote wasn't compelling enough. And I'd urge you, you know, I usually, when I do this for my clients with a consulting project, I'll go through two or three iterations. I'd like to recommend that you try at least one iteration. If you didn't pull the right group in 2 weeks, take it down, rewrite it, make it more compelling. Be outrageous about it to see if you could pull the right candidate.
A question just came in. Question is, do you have any samples of compelling marketing statements?
So last month in our webinar, I mentioned that you could go to our website, impacthiringsolutions.com. There's a section for hiring managers. Under that is a free resources section, and there are some examples there. You can also, I made the offer, you can email me directly, and I will send you a PDF of our entire book. And in Chapter 6, the most popular chapter is titled, How to Attract the Bottom Third of the Candidate Pool. Obviously written a little bit tongue-in-cheek, there's a little humor in this, but it goes into excruciating granular detail, step-by-step, of how to develop a compelling marketing statement with numerous examples and illustrations.
Thank you. And for those of you who weren't able to attend session one, it's on our website, so you can listen to that at another time.
Brad and I have a blog that you can link to through our website, and there are hundreds of hours of audio programming, video samples and clips, and extensive articles written about how to attract people through the methods we're talking about. And in fact, if you're a Vistage member, I did one of those Friday webinars where I summarized how to do this in a PowerPoint video program that you can download and share with your team.
Thank you.
Okay, so why advertise then? You know, there's an old adage in recruiting that goes something like, even a blind squirrel gets a nut sometimes. And so if you could spend $25 on Craigslist, $3.95 on LinkedIn, it's probably worth it if you could get a couple of good candidates in the process. But I would put very little effort into trying to bring people forward through advertising, when that's compared to the traditional approach, where most companies spend 90% or more effort in trying to get people through advertising. Okay, step three. I call this one degree of separation. Y'all familiar with 6 degrees? You know, we're all connected to Kevin Bacon through 6 levels.
Yep.
You can reach anybody on the planet in 6 phone calls. That's stupid. If I had to go through 6 people to get 1 referral, I'd be dead by the time the job got filled. I want to think 1 degree of separation. So if Dana is the person that I want to recruit, I want to think about, where are all the places does Dana go and hang out with other people who are just like him? I know that's a scary thought when you start thinking about it. It's supposed to be humorous, Dana.
Yes, I was laughing.
So we want to think about, where does Dana go and hang out with others who are just like him? Does he attend any trade association conferences? Are there trade groups or industry groups that meet for breakfast, lunch, or dinner once a month in those local towns? For example, if Dana was an HR guy, we'd probably want to go to the local SHRM meeting. We'd want to see if there was a SHRM representative on their local board of directors in the L.A. Orange County area, or whatever city you're in, that might circulate this among the members at their weekly or monthly meeting. typically the officers of local trade groups and associations know who the very best people are and who's looking or not looking for a job. Sometimes they have informal networking where they actually do this and share these job openings with each other. What alumni association does Dana belong to? Where does he get his continuing education from? What publications does he read? How does he interact and connect with other people who are just like him? Now, this gets really tough when you're hiring folks at the plant level, on the manufacturing line, in the warehouse, administrative role. But as you move up to professional level jobs, engineers, inventory control analysts, where people are degreed, professional, hold certifications, there's a body of continuing education, there are seminars, workshops, and associations, it's very easy to get to the right person through this strategy. So I'm going to come up with 12 to 15 ideas. I'm going to look at those and go, boy, 9 of these are just the stupidest thing I ever came up with, but wow, 2 or 3 of these, classic brainstorming, right? Classic, those are great ideas. Let's reach into those groups and go after the right person. Let me give you a couple of examples of how powerful this is. Now, this is all offline. I'll give you the online piece in a minute through LinkedIn. Offline. I have a client, Phoenix, Arizona. They're a security guard company. They hire minimum wage armed security guards. That's oxymoronic, right? Armed, minimum wage. Never mind. That's a different story.
You're on a roll, Barry.
I know. Armed security guards, minimum wage. Phoenix, Scottsdale, Arizona, for about a 10-year period, had one of the highest rates of commercial growth this country's ever seen. You couldn't find an armed security guard to guard your new commercial building going up if your life depended on it. My client has tried referrals, radio advertising, the newspaper, nothing. So they started to think, all right, let's try Barry's idea of 1 degree of separation. How would we get to the right person? How would we find that individual? So if you were my client, where would you first post your compelling marketing statement that would zero right in on where the places are that these people are interacting, communicating, coming together, sharing? What holds them in common? Guns and ammo. So first place my client put it was at the local shooting range. Well, now you start thinking backwards. So, okay, if they're at the shooting range, where'd they get their guns and ammo? Oh, let's post the compelling statement up in all the local gun stores and gun shops. Now, I know this gets scary after a little bit. Now we start to think, well, how do they communicate and interact? What kind of groups might these folks like to belong to? So my client went online and got all the local officers and their email addresses, which is all public information online, for the NRA, the shooting clubs, the hunting organizations, all the local mercenary and militia groups. I'm just kidding, they didn't do that. But they did go after all these other groups and associations that were dealing with guns and ammo. What kind of prior life experiences might the typical security guard have? Military or paramilitary? So they went to the local military bases, went into their outplacement offices, and for everybody coming off of active or reserve duty, they see that notice. They went to the union halls, to the police departments, the fire station posted up there. They went to the local gun and knife show in Phoenix, Arizona, set up a booth at the very front, and handed out a compelling statement of work to every single person who walked by. Put it in their bag, whatever they were carrying around. For 10 years, they didn't do an ounce of recruiting. They had an extraordinary number of people coming forward. All right, now I'd like you to be thinking about what's the underlying theme in this example and the next one I'm going to share with you, because there's a common theme that unites these two examples, and they're radically different examples. So by the way, I have thousands of these stories that clients have shared with me over the years of how they've used these techniques to bring great people to the table. Story number 2. I have a client here in Southern California. They're one of the country's largest syndicators of Christian music broadcasting and conservative talk radio programming. They have little tiny itty-bitty radio stations in small towns all over the country, like towns of 5,000 people or less. One of the most difficult hires for them to make was for a radio ad. someone every month that would go knocking on doors, would you like to buy a radio job? Nobody wanted this job. They all felt it was too restrictive of a programming format and too small of a market. So about a dozen years ago, I'm sitting with my client, we're brainstorming. I'm like, so how do you do this now? Well, we take whatever the local paper is, we place the job description, you know, as an ad in the paper, and we get nothing. So I said, well, let's think about this for a minute. We're in a small town. Might people congregate that would share your similar values and mission? Duh, the church. Every one of these small towns has 4 to 5 churches under different denominations. What if your radio general manager in that town, every time they had an opening for sales rep, did this old school? They took a thumbtack, they took a compelling marketing statement, they marched into that church, synagogue, you know, place of worship, and stuck it physically up on the bulletin board. My client started doing that, and over a 10 to 12 year period, got extraordinary response. Now, they never found a specific radio ad sales rep. What they did is they found a lot of great sales reps. They put a good program in place to teach people how to sell radio ads, and every person they hired was perfectly aligned and meshed with their values and mission. What's the underlying theme in these two stories? The theme is fish where the fish are. So for those of you on our call that are fishermen, I shouldn't say that's gender-specific, fisher people, I don't know what the right term is.
Anglers.
For those of you that are familiar with that idea, you wouldn't cast your line in the part of the pond where there or lake where there's no fish. You'd fish deeply, not at the surface level, but deeply in the right places. Now, what's interesting to me is if I look back over my career of doing this for 25 or 30 years, I find inspiration comes to me for new ideas in lots of strange places. So here's where this one came from. Years ago, now I'm going to date myself, I'm on a service, an internet service called CompuServe. Got to have a little grayer bit of hair to remember this one. Many of you are looking around going, what's CompuServe? Anyway, I'm an old line forum and blog junkie. I'm on CompuServe in one of their forums for photography. Photography is a hobby of mine. A woman posts a statement that at first blush I thought was the stupidest thing I'd ever read, and then literally within seconds realized it was brilliant. What she said was, if you want to go and get great pictures of wild animals, you can't watch them on TV or go to the zoo. You got to go on safari, go to Africa, and get right up close in their natural habitat to get wonderful pictures. I'm like, bingo. She just described real recruiting. The traditional process that most companies use to find great people is passive. Stick an ad up and wait for a miracle to happen. Wait for someone to drop from the rafters into our lap that's a perfect match for what we need. Rarely does that happen, but in a hot job market like the one we're in, and it's going to continue for the next 2 or 3 years, it's an impossible task. If you really want the very best, no matter what the job is, if you want the very best, you have to go to where they're hanging out. They're not going to come to you. The ones who are going to come to you, other than luck and hope, are the deadbeats, rejects, retreads, dysfunctional folks who can't perform, can't hold a job, drag everybody else down into the cesspool. You got to go to where they are. That's the awful piece.
Hey, Barry, just 1 second. There is a little bit of static on the phone. I think it's from the cell. So I want to make sure we don't miss any of the valuable ideas that you're sharing.
There's nothing I could do about that since my business line with the Verizon change suddenly died. It's been 3 weeks trying to get someone to fix.
Okay. Sorry. All right. Thank you.
I'll climb off my customer service soapbox now.
Thank you.
You made me lose my place, Dana.
Sorry.
Now, let's talk about how you take this idea of one degree of separation and you do it online. So LinkedIn pretty much is the accepted networking tool for professionals. Facebook is useless. Yeah, I know there's tools developing like Glassdoor and some others. The problem is in finding folks, Facebook doesn't collect enough job information or role information to be valuable and useful. I think Facebook could be the world's greatest recruiting tool on earth if they just start thinking about collecting some of that data. But for now, LinkedIn is it. And most professionals have put their resume, for, you know, more or less, onto their LinkedIn profiles. You can text keyword search every single one of those words to identify people with unbelievable granularity and precision of who you want to be talking to. Now, if you'll remember from our last conversation, what percentage of folks are open to considering a new opportunity at any given time? 50%. So 50% of the folks that you send a nice, warm, friendly message to on LinkedIn are going to respond and be open to talking with you. And when you send a nice, warm message that goes something like, "Hi, Dana, I came across your background on LinkedIn. I was impressed by some of the things you've done. We're currently recruiting for a whatever, you know, a manager of X. Would you be open to spending a few minutes with me on the phone networking about this opportunity?" And 50% of the people you send that message to will respond and be open to talking with you. If you spend 15 to 20 minutes a day popping out 10 to 15 messages, by the end of the week you got 100 messages out and you're having 30, 40, 50 conversations. What's the downside? It requires an investment of time. It requires you to be proactive. You got to track the calls, when did people respond, scheduling, much more effort than passively sticking a job description online and crossing your fingers and playing the game of post and pray, hoping that someone's going to drop out of the rafters into your lap. But if you want to find the very best, you can start escalating your efforts of referrals, you know, beyond advertising, referrals, LinkedIn, offline kinds of groups. And I guarantee it, if you do these three or four things, I shouldn't say guarantee, I'd say there's probably an 80 to 90% probability that if you do these three or four things, there's a very good chance you're going to find the right candidate literally within a 4 to 6 week cycle. And what we're going to do is save for our next conversation, what if you try all of these things and nothing works? You know, rather than approach hiring as a level of desperation where you then dummy down the job just to fill a warm seat, what's the next step? What do we do if none of these techniques work, even though 80 to 90% of the time I can guarantee they will work? So that's what we're going to cover in our next call.
Okay, that's outstanding, Barry. Thank you very much. We're going to open up the line in just a few minutes, but we have so many individuals on the call today. I'm going to ask everyone to please put your phone on mute and then unmute it if you have a question for Barry, or you can send a chat question in also. Before we turn the recording, we'll turn the recording feature off in just a second. So two things. If you're attending today's program, you'll automatically get the invite for the August 23rd part three session. And if you have any other people you want to invite, just let us know, or you can go on our website and sign up. We also have another program coming up on August 16th. We'll send invites out. It's on the mobile workforce, so the timing is perfect. So we have our regular open line program on August 16th and our special edition part three with Barry Deutsch on August 23. I want to close this part of our program down by thanking all of you for attending, and let me turn off the recording feature, and we're going to open up the line so you can ask Barry specific questions if you'd like. You can email Barry, or you can use the chat box. We'll be right back. Please stand by.